This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Thanks again to Dorothy Lazard, who joined us before the break. Back in 1968, just before she published I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which brought her global acclaim, Maya Angelou signed a contract to produce and star in a 10-part television series for KQED. Made during a trip that Angelou made to San Francisco while she was really living in Ghana, it's a remarkable document of its time, an attempt to show and celebrate the Black American experience and demonstrate its continuity with longstanding African cultural practices. Centering Angelou's voice and poetry and perspective, the series was, as one film researcher put it, a fascinating document of a brief period of time following the assassination of Dr. King when a politicized Black perspective found a place on the public airwaves. KQED's press release called it the first comprehensive television exposure of Black culture, void of white interpretation, condescension, or white interposition. There was even a Black producer of the series. Angelou made this series in San Francisco, both because KQED pursued her, as we know from archival documents, and because, as she put it in a 1982 essay, for a time San Francisco became her home. She explained the name of the series, Blacks, quoting now, Blacks, Blues, Black, meaning that in Africa we were Blacks, brought by slavery to the U.S., our condition of misery could be called the blues, and now through our awareness of African heritage, we were proudly becoming Blacks again. Joining us to listen back to the series and provide context for the work, we're joined by Cheryl Fabio, wonderful filmmaker who directed and produced Evolutionary Blues, a documentary about West Oakland's music and community. Welcome, Cheryl. Good to talk with you again.
Well, nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Dorothy Saruta, professor of Africana Studies at San Francisco State University, specializing in literature. Welcome, professor.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Professor Saruta, you saw this after it sort of was re-released, pulled from the archives. Do you remember what your first thoughts were looking back on this film after having kind of studied these times for a long time? What did you think about it when it emerged from being lost?
For one thing, it's so important that she was doing this at that particular time. That was a strong period of African-American activism. And the visual, what I think is so important about it and why people are appreciating today, I think it was the beginning of teaching through the arts, teaching through the visual and the musical. I mean, I think it was what influenced the eventual development of Sesame Street, the way you can teach through the arts, through the music, through the personal, and identifying the situation that people are living and experiencing and making it real. And so that was very, very exciting because she covered so many areas in that 10-part series.
Yeah. Just want to let people know, too, if you go to KQED's YouTube channel or you just search in YouTube, you know, Maya Angelou, KQED, you can see the entire series. Cheryl Fabio, kind of, same question to you. When you first saw this series, what did you think about it as a filmmaker? Like, what did you notice? What were you drawn to?
Well, first of all, let me say that I watched it over the weekend, the series. Mm-hmm. And when I first started watching, I said, well, why didn't I see it originally? Mm-hmm. And that's because I was out of town. I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So it was KQED. It wouldn't have been nationally broadcast. But as a filmmaker, my first thing is, oh, these clips are amazing.
Oh, yes.
So I really love the clips. And I knew so many of those people. It was hilarious for me because, you know, like everybody is grown and old now, but you're looking at people in their prime, including Maya Angelou. I think it was breathtaking just to see her at that stage and to recognize that for me to think, because, you know, teaching through the arts, the Black, both art and political movement, that was all what my household was about. So there was nothing necessarily new, and it also hasn't stopped in my world. Mm-hmm. But what was kind of amazing is I think that this was the first time that an African-American who had been living in Africa, coming back to America, was doing that kind of dualistic conversation about what being African-American was about. Now that was, you know, that's truly a unique perspective, at least to me.
Yeah.
So seeing her was just amazing. I think, you know, we've lived with the person, and so it's hard to reach back and remember. But yeah, we were all young one time, and amazingly beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's listen in to Maya Angelou. This is her introducing the entire series with some lines from the County Cullum poem, "What Is Africa to Me?"
Hello. My name is Maya Angelou. What is Africa to me? One 3 centuries removed from the lands my fathers loved, the spicy grove, the cinnamon tree. What is Africa to me? This is a question I ask myself and I ask Black Americans, and I attempt in this series to answer it.
Professor Saruta, could you tell us a little bit more about this time of sort of rising awareness of African heritage in Black communities?
Yes, it was all over. I had come here from Chicago to go to college at around that time. And I remember on returning home, my brother picked me up at the airport in a dashiki. I had a big nacho, and we got to my parents' house, and my brother said, Well, Negro parents, here is your Black Power daughter, and I'm taking my African-American self home. So we had these 3 things happening within my own family that I could say it was looking at change. My parents were changing to stop being identified as Negro and wanted to be African-American. My brother was totally into Africa. Everything in his house was Africa. And I was truly into more of a Black Power feeling and movement with a feeling of a raised fist. And I think this was going on in African Americans. We were not all exactly doing the same in our ways of celebrating our Blackness. And I think her series captures all of those different ways of being. I'm at San Francisco State as a professor. This was the home of the creation of Black Studies. It's now not only nationwide, but worldwide. And I think San Francisco, for some interesting reason, became the Bay Area, because we got the Panthers here. We have other movements going on. And as you know from the program, she was featured at here as a professor, as the filmmaker just mentioned, in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So she had come back from Ghana.
Yeah. We would like to hear from listeners on one specific question here as we go through this. Did you see Maya Angelou's KQED TV series when it first aired in 1968? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We'd love to hear from people who saw this when it first aired in that summer of 1968. You know, most of the series is shot in KQED studios with just this incredibly beautiful, powerful figure in the center of the frame for really long stretches. But the crew, as Cheryl Fabio noted earlier, also got some absolutely incredible footage out in the Bay Area. I want to listen into Cut 2, which is about kind of African understanding of religious observance. Let's listen.
When in African ritual ceremonies, when a person goes into a trance, it's the same as when they get the spirit in the Black American churches. The Black American churches have, the Black Americans have a joy. There's a joy that Black Americans have in praising God, in enjoying Him. We saw it in a revival here in San Francisco.
So, Cheryl Favio, this is only one of like a series of really remarkable pieces of footage. When you see this, when you see footage like this, are you thinking like, how did they get that shot, or how did they get a camera in there in this way, or what's your thought?
No, you know, actually, I saw Alan Willis's name in the credits, and I was real clear how they got the shot because. He's one of the few, I mean, there were a couple of others on Velva Davis and Bill Moore and a couple of others, but Alan was very well connected in the world. And when you see people enter spaces like that, that are kind of sacred spaces, not just religiously, but, you know, personal spaces, you kind of know that the person who's entering with that really obtrusive camera has a relationship to the space, right? And I think that Alan, he gets these camera person credits, but he really does have the ability to produce in the Black community in a way that I think a lot of other people wouldn't think to produce, but also maybe didn't have the same access. Yeah. So I'm making an assumption there, but I'm pretty confident in the assumption that I make.
Yes, and I mean, I agree totally.
Oh, yeah. It's really interesting because, I mean, just given the conversations that have been happening a lot around public radio about the need for greater representation of different races and ethnicities on these airwaves, it was really, and behind not just, you know, talking into the mics, but people working in production, it was really kind of amazing to see that in the press release for KQED's materials on this, they make sure to note that there were Black producers involved too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It really makes, excuse me, I didn't, go on.
Oh, go ahead, Professor Ceruta.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was agreeing and I just wanted to add the way they captured her passion, because I think what made that program so important and so embraceable is the way her body and her mind and everything, her eyes sparkling, mm-hmm. all of that was captured on the camera, and it shows her passion, and it entices you to go with her into that program in a particularly interesting way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the diction too, the way she spoke,
she's orchestrating you into this show. It's about Black life, and without saying it, unapologetically Black, but made the point.
Yeah, amazing performer. Karen from Oakland, welcome to the show. You saw this when it first came out.
Yes, I was 9 years old, and I lived in East Oakland with my little sister, who was four, and my grandmother and mom. It was required viewing in our household.
What do you have memories, specific memories of like little snippets or just like particular things she said or that you saw?
Well, I remember that I thought she looked like what I think a queen would look like. She was so just glowing and radiant, and the way she spoke and the way she moved, and then she would have guests on, and it was just fascinating to see people that looked like me and my sister, my family, and it was inspiring. It made me feel like I could do anything. And so I felt like it had a real impact on our lives. And I thank my mom and grandma for making it a required viewing and something that we look forward to. So, and I'm a 63-year resident of Oakland, and I'll never forget what Maya Angelou and Black Boots Black did for our family.
Oh, Karen, right. Thank you so much. Yes. That is a beautiful story. Yeah, and I'm glad you're still here, Karen. Thank you for...
Yes,
for...
I'm still here. proud West Oakland resident, yes.
Karen, thanks so much. I want to... Listen, we couldn't talk about this series and not play some of Maya Angelou reading. So let's listen into it. It's cut four. This is a poem that Maya Angelou wrote and performed.
I'm going to tell you a poem. I quite often do on these programs, get a chance to say some of my own poetry. This is a poem called A Letter to an Aspiring Junkie. Let me hip you to the streets, Jim. Ain't nothing happening. Maybe some tomorrow's gone up in smoke. Raggedy preachers telling a joke to lonely, sunless old ladies' maids. Nothing happening. No haps, baby. Oh, there's a slew of young cats riding that cold white horse. A gray old monkey on their back, of course, does rodeo tricks. No haps, baby. No haps. There's an old-time pimp with a space-age conk setting up some food for a game of tonk or poker or get 'em dead and alive. The streets? Climbing the streets like you can't climb in the rear end of a lion. Then it's fine. It's a bugaloo and it's a shingaling. It's African dreams on a buck and a wing and a prayer. That's the streets, Jim. Nothing happening. Can you dig it?
Sure, Fabio. Listening to this poem, seeing this performance, it's kind of fascinating to think about this moment in Maya Angelou's life before she writes, the works that made her famous. And yet we can already see, I mean, even just the way she says poem makes me want to write poetry.
I do think that one of the fascinating things in this 10-part series is the way that she brings poetry into it. And it does make poetry sort of a front and center, voice. They're like tiny little essays that kind of move you through from, if she's reading Paul Laurence Dunbar, to her own writing. But my mother was a poet. Mm-hmm. And so not only that this cadence that's presented in this poem, it's the talk of that time, in that there's a shift from everything kind of coming from a very middle class perspective to even some of those same middle class people, but also other people talking from a broader perspective about Black culture. It's lovely to see her read her poetry, because I don't think all writers read their poetry as interestingly as a lot of the poets then did. And I think that's a precursor to some of this hip hop stuff, because that went into spoken word went into hip hop. And it's all sort of, when you're talking about good poems in all of these genres, they are sort of like essays of the time, short essays of the time. So I loved hearing her read her own stuff, and also some things that are really difficult to read, like, some of Paul Laurence Dunbar's poems they're hard to read. They're lovely, and they're written in the, 1800s, early 1900s. And so there's a different dialect going on. To hear her read them, it was a joy.
We got just a few seconds.
Can I speak real quickly? That it shows a connection between generations, because when you listen to her reading that poem, you think of Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, We Real Cool. It's on the same subject of wasting lives and dying soon. It shows, it's like Afrofuturism between Gwendolyn Brooks and Maya Angelou. I believe she more than likely knew, I'm sure she knew of Gwendolyn Brooks' work. And it, so the two of
Thank
them
you
connected
so much, Professor Saruta. I'm so sorry to have to cut you off. We've got 5 seconds. Dorothy Saruta, Professor of African Studies. We've had Cheryl Fabio. We've been looking back at Maya Angelou. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way, from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.